The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Andrew Locher coming to you live from our studio here in Edmond, Oklahoma. Dwight Falk is producing the program for us this morning, and it's been an active morning for us already. Dwight's had to really scramble around. We've had a troubled mixer in our studio here. Actually, it's been a number of times now, and also some pesky birds which land on our antenna outside and take us off air. So if you're looking for things to pray about, you might just ask that God help us continue to fight through the technical details. But I think everything's up and going just fine this morning. Yesterday, Mr. Stephen Fleury on his program suggested that we watch what's taking place in Britain. There was a confidence vote for Prime Minister May. And we know that in the last 24 hours, a lot's really happened, and it continues on into today. I would encourage you to tune in tomorrow, and I'd encourage you to listen to all of our programming, to watchthetrumpet.com, to better understand the significance of what's taking place in Britain. Honestly, I don't feel qualified to comment too much on this issue. It's difficult enough to keep up with American politics and understand how that works. And so our crews that work the Trumpet Daily radio program and the Trumpet Hour, they do a fantastic job keeping track of all these details and telling us what is the more critical understanding to capture from those events. Suffice it to say, Mrs. May won the confidence vote. I think it was 200 MPs supported her position, but 117 voted against her. And just the one article I read this morning briefly showed that the opposition is really quite strong. But the outcome of the vote means that Mrs. May can't be challenged with another confidence vote for a year. So it does give her more time to be at work. So it'll be interesting to see how that all develops. I do like to open the program by talking to you about what's going on in the work or the church. And I thought I'd give you just a few areas that we could talk about. We're very close to the ministerial conference that is coming in just a few more weeks now. It will be our 19th conference for the Philadelphia Church of God. A few years ago, we changed the frequency of the conferences. They occur every 18 months now. We have ministers traveling in from 10 different nations. There will be more than 100 ministers and wives in attendance at the lectures here. During the conference, we receive about 40 hours of instruction. We get updates on the regions around the world, and all of it really is quite a great support mechanism for the ministry and does get us to really focus on what we're doing through Gerald Fleury's direction. There is a special weekend in the midst of the conference, and we expect probably about 600 or 700 people here in Edmond, all told with the locals and the visitors and the ministry. And we have several social activities planned for that weekend. Of course, the exhibit is still open, and I'll comment on that in just a moment. But we're really thrilled to have the conference during a time when the exhibit is here, again, for the visiting ministers to take that in, and also the guests. We also have a performing arts showcase that's orchestrated by Mr. Ryan Malone, then our Irish dance team of Paris and Alexa Turgeon, and Vienna Fleury will work on some Irish dance pieces. And then Mrs. Sarah Pravatsky is also preparing the ballet dancers to perform that weekend. So it should be quite active and a lot of fun. There will be meetings during this time with the regional office directors. We'll be talking about the various programs that are ongoing. The waiting room program is pretty active right now. I think we've added just shy of 10,000 new subscriptions this year in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and America. We've also had some new TV station opportunities present themselves for us that we've taken advantage of. We now have television coverage throughout the Caribbean, another nationwide network through Australia, and we're adding stations in the United States and Canada as well. We will also be talking about the Feast of Tabernacles. There's just a lot of things that we cover here, a lot of business during the conference. And so it should be a very busy week as we wrap up 2018 and move on into 2019. I mentioned the exhibit earlier. I believe it's been mentioned on this program, but we've extended the exhibit through the springtime, which is, again, really great news for us. Shane Granger is the PR man for the church, and he provides reports on the number of visitors, and we just surpassed 6,000 visitors to the exhibit. And what I think is really great news, I just looked at his numbers this morning, and 86% of those that have come to see the exhibit are not affiliated with the Philadelphia Church of God. So it's really proven to be a great way for us to bring people to campus, to show them how God has really set things up here. But I think even more importantly than that is the message that is communicated through the exhibit. They do learn about a king-priest or a king-prophet relationship and the benefit to a nation that has that wonderful alliance. Mr. Granger also pointed out that the final events for our concert series, the 2018-2019 season, those last few events are really selling quite well. And again, it just called to mind the thousands of people that have visited our campus now. 20 years is our benchmark, or we celebrated 20 years of the concert series, most all of those taking place on campus. Of course, we've had the two archaeological exhibits. We've had various dignitaries on campus, very different guest speakers. Really is remarkable to think about the impact we've had on the local area. One last area to talk to you about is just the Key of David program, and I'll be referring to that kind of throughout the rest of today's show. So far this new season, Gerald Fleury has taped more programs consecutively than we have for the past three or four years. That'd be hard to outproduce the last 3 or 4 weeks. So we're excited to see those new programs come out, and I think it's really an indication of fulfilled prophecy. We'll probably break that streak of consecutive recorded programs during the ministerial conference because of the busyness that really surrounds that event. And during that time, we'll repeat a few programs. We have a few older programs that are now 14 years old. We've broadcast them anywhere from 15 to 20 times, and we still get amazing response out of them. And so we'll probably have a couple repeats as we conduct the ministerial conference, and then right back to work, I'm sure. Yesterday, we taped a program in the auditorium. Mr. Fleury spoke on the lost century of the church. It's really a fascinating program. That lost century of church history is preserved for us in the Bible. We have three books that explain it to you that were offered on the program, and it's been a while since we've offered those particular books. The last three programs that have aired, the basic premise behind them being France in prophecy, have really responded well. I looked on YouTube this morning. We have been promoting them to a limited extent, about the same promotion that we typically give the Key of David program on YouTube. But I noticed that the last three Key of David episodes all combined have been watched more than 100,000 times on YouTube. So that's really exciting to see. And really, I think that gets to the heart and core of what I want to talk about today. There, we do have an advantage if you read the trumpet, if you watch the Key of David, if you listen to programming here on KPCG. We do have an advantage because we have God's perspective. We'll talk more about that after we take a short break. I wanted to discuss a flashpoint in the world that's really only receiving just a little attention right now, but it's vital to the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. So we'll take a short break and come back and get into that issue.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Apostle Peter was crucified 2 or 3 years before the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. That disaster was a type of the coming Great Tribulation, which will engulf the world. Peter knew that he was going to be crucified shortly after his epistles were written. Paul had been killed about a year or two before Peter's death. Other apostles had also been killed. There was a storm of persecution. As Peter wrote his book, they were entering into the darkest of times. Yet, in spite of all this bad news, Peter had a message filled with hope. To learn more about this hope-filled vision, request Gerald Flurry's free booklet, The Epistles of Peter, A Living Hope. There is no cost or obligation. And if you have not yet enrolled in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence course, make sure you sign up today. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will carefully lead you through a comprehensive study of God's inspired Word. Become a Correspondence Course student and get to know your Bible like never before. There is absolutely no cost or obligation. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back. In a way, I really respect our team of, not in a way, I just really do respect our team of KPCG hosts and the Trumpet writing staff. They have to cover the entire world and find what's relevant. But it goes far deeper than that. There's so much happening all over the world, and it's all, in a sense, building toward a certain conclusion. And yet there's a lot of noise out there. And so the responsibility they carry of cutting through that and reporting almost prophetically relevant is quite a task. Our message is unique, as I said. We really strive to give you the meaning behind all of the events. Our aim is not to simply report on the news. There are plenty of sources out there, some of them decent, a lot of them are bad, but there's plenty of sources out there to report on the news. Our job and our message brings you God's perspective. I wanted to quote a few Bible verses here from Isaiah chapter 46, verses 9 and 10. It says there, "Remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is none else. I am God, and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure." That kind of sets us up for something that I'll cover here in just a moment. But as we draw attention to, God knows the end from the beginning. His counsel, his prophecy does stand, and God will accomplish what he set out to do. And so when you think about our staff writers, our staff hosts for the programs, they watch world news, they understand political systems, they have to dig through the lies and the deceit. The deep state is out there making things more difficult. And then to add on to that, or to actually what really brings us clarity, is to involve God, to bring in what the Bible teaches. If you listen to our message, and if you're familiar with your Bible, then you know that God uses men and events to shape this world. We also know from 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4 that Satan is the god of this world, but he can only respond to what God is doing. I want you to meditate upon this passage as we set up the remainder of this program. It's from Daniel chapter 2. Daniel, the prophet Daniel, was explaining God's revelation to a king, King Nebuchadnezzar, in this particular passage. And he was explaining to him how he knew so much. Verses 20 through 22 of Daniel chapter 2 read, "Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He, speaking of God, he removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them who know understanding. He reveals the deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him." Really fascinating passage of scripture here. The fact that God sets up kings or God removes kings. That's something that this world probably doesn't think about. They vote, they work their way into political office, and they take credit themselves. But really, God is the one that's orchestrating all of the events that are happening here or allowing for them to happen. God is aware of the political scheming when he talks about he knows what's in the darkness. And of course, he talks there about his ability to not only declare this, but to maneuver things. There's a companion passage over in Colossians chapter 1 in the New Testament that proves that God, through Jesus Christ, created these thrones, dominions, and powers. Let me just quote to you verse 16 of Colossians 1. It says, "For by him," referring to Jesus Christ, "for by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. The Bible shows us that God is the one that sets the stage here. And then events play out. And again, we are free moral agents. It's not just a robotic exercise. It really is a fascinating study to really meditate on as you think about how God does everything. Now, I just mentioned the Key of David program, that the three-part series about France and Bible prophecy. And through the Key of David program, through the Trumpet magazine, we're seeing a message behind world events that you don't hear anywhere else. I love to see our response figures so high. And while some people won't act on what they hear, they might be skeptical of it, as time plays out, they'll see that we were right on target and really way, way ahead of mass media. Those programs are so unique because they tell a deeper story that's happening. Now, what's happening in Britain and what's happening in Europe needs our attention. But I don't want us to forget a related area of interest that we should keep our eye on, too. Actually, if you look at the last 10 years of programming on the Key of David, some of our most responsive programs have revolved around the Prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, as he is called in Ezekiel chapter 38 and verse 2. We have a booklet entitled The Prophesied Prince of Russia, and I really encourage you to get that booklet out again and read. It's a newer publication, yet as we'll see here, the understanding about who that prophesied prince is has been out there in our message for more than 10 years. You can go to our website, thetrumpet.com, go to the literature tab, and download a PDF of that book, The Prophesied Prince of Russia. There's also a host of articles, as I'll quote from in a few moments, that are relevant to this subject. We know that Vladimir Putin is prophesied to have a confrontation with God's man. The prophet of God is used to expose what Satan is doing through this president of Russia. Vladimir Putin, as we know, is a former KGB officer. He was part of the Spetsnaz, if I'm not mistaken. And he's been president of Russia since 2012. So going on 6 years now, he served in that capacity. But don't forget that he also was president of Russia for a time prior to that. And then he stepped out of that office and was prime minister of Russia between, I think it was 2008 and 2012. During that time, he was really the one controlling Dmitry Medvedev when he served as president in Russia. The goal, I'll just cut right to the chase here, the goal of Vladimir Putin is to restore the Soviet Empire. That's one of the main points of our booklet. You can also study about him in our Ezekiel booklet or our booklet on Haggai. On a Key David program that I'm going to quote from here in just a few moments and play you a few clips, one of the statements Mr. Fleury made is just so vital for us to keep in mind. He said, and I quote, "If we don't get into the Bible, we cannot understand these problems." We really do need God's perspective, don't we? And that's what you get on this station, and that's what you get through our magazines. You really need to subscribe to everything we offer. It's a challenge to keep up with it all, but it is worth your time. Now, there have been some recent events that have made the news that should prepare us for an uptick in activity that's leading up to World War III. I mean, that's a pretty big statement. And if you're a regular viewer of this world's media, then you don't get that message, do you? Don't rely on shallow, distracted media sources of this world. You really need to bring God into the equation. Now, you might recall the naval battle that took place in the Kerch Strait on November 25th. That was just a few weeks ago. I want to quote to you from the BBC from an article on the 26th of November, 2018. Just to remind you of what happened there, the title of the article is "Tensions Escalate After Russia Seizes Ukraine Naval Ships." The article reads, "Russia has fired on and seized three Ukrainian naval vessels off the Crimea Peninsula in a major escalation of tensions between the two countries. Two gunboats and a tug were captured by Russian forces. A number of Ukrainian crew members were injured. A little bit further down, it explains how this all happened. It says the Russians placed a tanker under a bridge in the Kerch Straits. They were trying to prevent commerce and passage between these two seas. It says in the morning, gunboats and a tug tried to sail from the Black Sea port of Odessa to Mariupol in the Sea of Azov. Ukraine says that the Russians tried to intercept the ship, their ships, ramming the tug. The vessels continued toward the Kerch Strait, but were prevented by the tanker. Russia scrambled two fighter jets and two helicopters to the area. And then, as they reported, they believed up to six crew members had been injured. So what's the importance of this event? We don't see naval skirmishes too frequently in the news. They do happen. Oftentimes they're accidents or they're a show of power. But here you had actual gunfire and a ramming event. Pretty bold military confrontation. It did result in some injuries. What's the significance of all that? Well, back in January 2014, Gerald Fleury gave a Key of David program. And I'm going to play a few quotes from that in just a moment. But first, I wanted to give you a little background. Vladimir Putin made a statement back in 2005, 13 years ago, where he said the breakup of the Soviet Empire was, quote, the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the century. Now, that reveals his thinking. And if you study that old Soviet Empire, the Soviet architecture, you could say, it was really built around Ukraine being a big part of it. The naval fleet, the Black Sea Fleet, is the largest military base of Russia outside of Russia, and it's in Ukraine. So why is Ukraine, and I'm going to add another country here, Georgia, why is that so important to Russia? Well, I have a few facts here that I'm going to quote from two different blogs, and I was just looking at my notes, and I didn't write down the source. I'm sorry about that, but I will tell you that these are just basic facts you can find in a lot of different areas. This first blog says, Crimea is strategically important as a base for the Russian Navy. The Black Sea Fleet has been based on the peninsula since it was founded by Prince Potemkin in 1783. So please forgive me butchering some of these names. 1783, they formed a naval base there. And today, the Black Sea Fleet is moored there, or it's stationed there in Crimea. It says the fleet's strategic position helps Russia defeat Georgia in the South Ossetia War of 2008 and remains crucial to Russian security interests in the region. It gives the Russian Navy access to the Mediterranean. It's their only direct access to the Mediterranean. This blog continues, Crimea still has a 60% Russian population. Last week, and this is talking about back in 2014, and we'll refer to this in just a moment. But last week, Russia's upper house of parliament approved the use of force in Crimea. This blog asks, is anyone obligated to defend the region? The answer is the Budapest Memorandum on Security Assurance in 1994 was signed by the Ukraine, the United States, Britain, and Russia. And they did this basically to offer, at least verbally, some protection to this region where the Soviets used to station nuclear weapons. Now, as this blog points out, this security assurance was said to morally oblige signatories to intervene in the event that Ukraine is threatened, but it cannot be enforced. Ukraine is not part of the EU, as we know. It's not part of those 28 nations. And let's see, the last thing I want to quote here, what about the world's only superpower? It says President Obama warned Russia that there would be serious costs to any Russian military intervention in Ukraine. So Russia has warned everybody. However, after failing to intervene in Syria and facing gridlock in Congress, it's unlikely that Obama would be willing to sacrifice the political capital to stage an intervention before the midterm elections of this November. And of course, he didn't. So President Obama talks tough. President Putin acts tough. He not only says there will be consequences, he follows through. I wanted to just give you a few more details about, again, the geographic significance of this area. It's the second most important country after Russia to the Soviet Union, or it was historically. There's over 40 million people that live. It's one of Europe's biggest countries. It's one of the largest countries in the world, just geographically. It's 15% bigger than France. Ukraine shares 975 miles of a border with Russia in the east, making it strategically important, especially to the west, but also, and more importantly, to the east. Russia needs Ukraine as a buffer. Russia needs the Ukrainian port cities, not only for economic reasons, but for military reasons. Economically, Ukraine is a major manufacturer of ballistic missiles. They make large transport planes and launch pads for space carriers. It's a major player in the field of weapon systems development. There are 15 nuclear power reactors in Ukraine. Those reactors provide about 50% of the country's energy needs. The nuclear reactors, as this says, and their infrastructure can easily be converted to produce nuclear weapons. Ukraine is also a major producer and exporter of steel. Ukraine is a major transit point for oil and gas coming from Russia and Central Asia into EU, or into the European Union. This blog says any disruption will bring untold suffering to millions of Western Europeans who depend on gas coming from Russia. So it's strategically important for energy. This is quite an important location on the earth. And the Russians know that. And the Europeans know that. We understand the implications to NATO, to a united Europe, and to Russia regarding Ukraine. The previous administration, the Obama administration, sold us out in Ukraine, but it actually started before them. And today it's difficult for us to really have any influence there now. Now, I want you to consider how quickly things are moving. We need to be aware of what's happening. As we progress through this program, we're going to quote news stories of events that have taken place just in the last 10 years. But please pay attention to the last few months and recognize how things are escalating there. Mr. Fleury wrote a really critically important article that I urge you to go back and look at. It's from October 2008 in the print edition of the Trumpet magazine. There's a reprint available on our website. You can download the PDF today. Again, there's so many resources there on this subject. The title of that article, the title of the reprint article, is Russia's Attack Signals Dangerous New Era. Russia's Attack Signals Dangerous New Era. And this is an article, again, from 2008, which brings us back to one of the most foundational events that's relevant to this whole story, and that is when Russia attacked Georgia. Now, on the Key of David program, Mr. Fleury suggested that those actions require us to watch Europe. But let me read to you several quotes from this reprint article. And again, you really need to go get it. It's an amazing, amazing article. It says, Russia's attack on Georgia in August marks the beginning of a dangerous new era in history. This was the first military strike of a rising Asian superpower, and there will be more. October 2008. It says, the Baku-Supsa oil pipeline cuts right through Georgia. Russia now has more control over the oil and gas going through those pipelines, amounting to many billions of dollars worth. Russia is determined to be an energy superpower. If Russia sees its primary source of oil being threatened, it is going to fight. Skipping down, the article says U.S. President George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton had promised the Russians that NATO would not expand into the former Soviet Empire. That promise has already been broken in 1998 by NATO's expansion into Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic. And so here we're dealing with Putin. We're dealing with Russia trying to restore their empire. We're making empty promises, promises that turned out to be untruthful. And so you can expect the Russians to respond. This article continues that the current administration, George Bush's administration, was also trying to bring Georgia and Ukraine into NATO. Now, that's important. Not that the others aren't, but Ukraine is so important, so vital to Russia, as is Georgia. Mr. Flurry said, I don't believe Russia will ever allow that to happen. A little further down, it says it would have rendered Russia indefensible and threatened to destabilize the Russian Federation itself. Down further, Mr. Flurry says, however, I also don't believe that Russia is so afraid of the United States. Yes, the U.S. could bomb that area, but that is highly unlikely. The nation the Russians truly fear is Germany. This is from 2008. He quotes Dr. Friedman, which back in 2008, he was still working for Stratfor Intelligence. Dr. Friedman said, from the Kosovo experience, Moscow concluded that the United States and Europe were not prepared to consider Russian wishes, even in fairly minor affairs. That was the breaking point. I wanted to just remind you here of a confrontation between Mitt Romney and President Obama from 2012. If you recall that Mitt Romney brought out that Russia was a threat to be considered, and President Obama had a prepared statement ready to throw back at him. President Obama said the 1980s are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back because the Cold War has been over for 20 years. That was his administration's position. And then this is actually from a Washington Post article, and it was pretty interesting to go back and look at it. This is written 2 years after President Obama made that statement, and they just said, wow, if you look at what actually happened, what a terrible statement, what a foolish statement to make. They refer back to the hot mic incident from March 2012 when President Obama told the then President Dmitry Medvedev that it's important for Putin, who was a president-elect, it was important for Putin to give President Obama space. He didn't want to act before the elections. President Obama didn't, because it might threaten his chance for re-election. But he said after that, then we'll make some concessions. We'll talk tough, but you don't have to worry about what we're saying. And it just shows how horribly misleading that was to the American public. And it also reveals that the United States was cowering to Russia back then. Going back to this article from 2008, Mr. Flurry said, Russia wanted a war, and for an important reason. Kosovo was the breaking point. Mr. Flurry says, remember that history. Germany supported the independence of Croatia and Slovenia. All of Europe and America were openly hostile to Germany's action at that time, but Europe caved in when Germany threatened to pull out of the European Union. And so Germany moved into the former Yugoslavia and started to take Croatia and Slovenia, and we ended up helping them. We objected to it, but Germany pushed their way through. That's important to remember. Germany captured some strategically important territory, and Russia did not respond. This article says, this foreign policy shift in 1991 enraged America's traditional allies, Britain, France, and the Netherlands. These nations saw what Germany was doing, not only in Yugoslavia, but all over Europe. So if we go back to 1991 and we start looking at what's happening on the world scene, remembering that God sets kings and he removes kings, Germany's ambition was to control all of Yugoslavia. And Russia needs to hold Georgia and Ukraine. We have another great book, Germany's Conquest of the Balkans, that explains this whole treacherous betrayal of our World War II allies. You need to go back and look at that. Carrying on with this article, it's a longer article, and I could have 50,000 more quotes from it. It's probably a little exaggeration there, but it's really important to read. Down further in the article, it says, Russia shrewdly evaluated these events and saw an opportunity. There's a big difference between the prophesied prince of Russia and most other world leaders. When he sees opportunities, he capitalizes on them. He acts. This article says, this strategy worked to perfection once Russia invaded Georgia. The Russians wanted to drive home the idea that American guarantees are empty talk. It's a quote from Dr. Friedman. Now, Mr. Flurry said Russia had been planning for this invasion for some time, And that, again, is one of the foundational things I want us to think about. We'll see evidence of this planning as it is played out or executed over the course of 20 years. Now, think about this. This is back in 2008. This article says Vladimir Putin is called the prime minister of Russia, but that is a cover-up. He is really a dictator, or the dictator of Russia. Already we see confrontation between God's man and exposure of this prophesied prince of Russia. Dr. Friedman said, the war in Georgia, therefore, is Russia's public return to a great power status. Talks about calculated maneuvering and talks about Russia challenging America. He said, look at the response of the U.S. to this catastrophe. Russia knew it would be weak and timid, and he was right. There's no pride in our power. Now, as I've really got to move on, but as you go through this, Mr. Fleury talks about how we proved to be an unstable ally. And then the last half of the article is really interesting because it exposes this Russian-German action behind the scenes. Even though they fear each other, they work with each other. Mr. Fleury says, but look at history. Every time competition between Russia and Germany heats up, they form a deal with one another just before going to war. This article shows how Germany was likely complicit with Russia in their attack on Georgia as repayment for Russia not fighting against the Yugoslavia breakup. They're working together, and it leads to confrontation and war. I was going to quote Herbert Armstrong from 1956, how he explained that Germany would get control of the Balkans. 1980, he said, there will now be an effort to bring Yugoslavia into the Holy Roman Empire alliance. We know all of these things long, long in advance. And that is really important for us to focus on. I want to play this clip now from a Key of David program. It's clip number 3 to kind of set the stage for the remainder of this program.
Here is what we quoted in our Philadelphia Trumpet, and I'll just mention and paraphrase it, that I wrote about this in 2008 and wrote that about when Russia attacked Georgia, and I said now that Ukraine is the breadbasket of Russia, don't you think that they would go to war over Ukraine and that will come soon? You can read that in a reprint article we have on the October 2008 Trumpet issue.
So that program that we just played that clip from 2014. And there we were sounding the alarm about Russia's effort to revive this Soviet empire. Putin's actions in the Ukraine, as was said on that program, will serve as a linchpin to make all of this happen. It's likely going to lead to war between Europe and Russia, and we know from prophecy that will happen. Now, this is where things, I think, get really interesting, where we have a unique perspective that this world just seems absolutely oblivious to. The Germans let Russia take Georgia, and Germany used the United States to conquer the Balkans. Both, again, are critical geographic locations. Both are critical to the military success of the kings of the North and the prince of Russia, the king of the North, I should say. These are Armageddon armies, a term that Mr. Fleury used in that program. Armageddon armies that we're talking about. It's like a strategic chess match that we're watching, and it's played out over the course of just especially this last decade, but really you could go back for the last several decades, and you see this grand scheme taking place. But as I said, events are accelerating. They're moving rapidly. We can't take our eyes off Russia. They are becoming increasingly bold in their actions, and it's going to push Europe to unite for their own protection. This is Bible prophecy coming to pass. It's setting things up for some mind-staggering conflict. And as we often say, the good news about that is it means that Jesus Christ is about to return to reestablish the government of God on this earth. And again, that takes us right back to Daniel's prophecy. All of it is contained in Daniel chapter 2. So we see from this Key of David program that the Russian attack on Georgia open the way to attack Ukraine. Remember, Putin was president of Russia from 2000 to 2008. Then he stepped aside and took on the role of prime minister while he worked behind the scenes and controlled President Medvedev. Vladimir Putin is the prophesied prince of Russia. And he returned to that office of president in 2012, where he continued, or where he has continued since. And so he was president during the Georgia invasion. I'd like to play another clip now from that Key David program. This is clip number one.
I want to remind you what I talked about November the 24th, 2013. I got into the two verses, Ezekiel 38, verses 1 through 2. And then it was just 5 days after that program was aired that the president of Russia shocked the whole world by turning the Ukraine away from Europe and toward embracing Russia. Now that was something that was totally unexpected. Everybody expected the Ukraine to make a deal with Europe and be a part of the European Union, at least allied with them in some fashion. But then after that decision was made by the president of Ukraine, about 500,000 people were out demonstrating. A 500,000 people who did not want to go back to Mother Russia, did not want to be a part of Vladimir Putin, but there wasn't much they could do about it, and they haven't done much of anything to this point, but they were demonstrating in Kiev, the capital of Ukraine.
Now, again, remember the time frame here. 2008, the Russian invasion of Georgia. 2013, Putin is back in power now for less than a year as the president of Russia. And he convinces Ukraine, against all expectation, he convinces them not to become part of NATO. God was exposing all of this, all of Putin's actions back in 2008 and moving forward. Whether he was serving as president, prime minister, whatever he was doing, God was fully aware. God prophesied that Putin would advance his agenda to restore the Soviet Empire, and he was doing it through this prince of Russia. One more clip from that program, and it'll help us understand what all of this means. Clip two.
So what does it all mean? This is going to be something that causes Europe to unite in a way that this world can't even imagine. It's going to have a lot to do with causing Europe to develop into what the Bible calls, really, the Holy Roman Empire, or the world calls it that, and the Bible talks a great deal about it.
So this means, as was stated there, that the actions of the Prince of Russia is going to force Europe to unite. Today, we're watching that take place. We see weakness in NATO. We see weakness in the United States. We're watching the economic situation all over the world. We know that will also help unite these 10 kings that formed the last resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. But beyond economics, beyond some of the politics, we have to keep our eye on Russia. The threat the Europeans see in Russia, in Putin, will lead them to galvanize or to come together. They know they have to prepare for more confrontation. They're students of history. They know where this is all leading. There is great concern for what's going on in Russia. The Germans need a strong man to stand up to Putin. There's really very few people on this earth today that could do that. Because it's not just standing in his face, it's working with him and against him. It's treaties, there's treachery. All of these great powers coming together. I mean, really, this is exciting, exciting material. I was going to take a break, but we don't have time. I just want to really bring us forward now in history to what's taking place with Russia, Georgia, Ukraine, Crimea, and its impact on the Holy Roman Empire. I have one last audio clip to play. This is from another Key of David program that was recorded 2 months after the one that we have just been listening to. So this is from March 2014.
Greetings, everyone. China has just announced to the world that they agree with Russia's decision to invade the little country of Ukraine, or more specifically, the Crimea, that area of Ukraine. And this was a grisly, barbaric attack on a defenseless people, and yet the Chinese said they agree with that. And nothing could have been more barbaric than what just happened in the Ukraine. But I'll tell you, when you think about this, and everybody ought to be thinking about it, that when these two nations begin to agree on something like that, and they are powerful nations, superpowers with nuclear weapons, what does that portend for the world? It is woe to the world when you realize if they're going to be aggressive like that and approach the world like that and are going to cause all kinds of serious problems in this world. It's going to affect everyone.
Those are some pretty chilling words when you think about what he said there. And when you take a step back and look at what's developing out there geopolitically, Russia and China and a few other highly populated Asian nations are going to form an alliance, and they're going to come under the leadership of the Prince of Russia. Prophecy labels them as the Kings of the East. And God uses those Kings of the East as a corrective instrument to punish the Kings of the North, the Holy Roman Empire. And God uses the Holy Roman Empire to correct a hypocritical nation, the nations, the end time nations of Israel. God is the one that's behind all of this. God is the one that sets up kings and takes down kings. God establishes all of these powers. Now, Satan influences things and adds the evil element. God is not at all responsible for the evil. What God is trying to do is to teach man that he's not capable of ruling himself. God is prophesying a future government of peace and prosperity, and that is how we end all of our messages. That is our hope. It is amazing to watch all of this come together. Russia factors in heavily to events in Europe that are going to bring together the Holy Roman Empire. You can look at Revelation chapter 17 later on your own. Verses 12 and 13 talk about those 10 kings. They have power for just 1 hour, one prophetic hour. So it's a short period of time, but it is going to be the worst suffering and destruction this planet has ever experienced. We've been talking about this for more than 7 decades. But really, again, if you just take a look at what's happened in the last 12 months, there have been developments in Russia. We've seen God use a Jeroboam figure to save America temporarily. We're watching Brexit, the fiasco with all of that. France and Germany are being more vocal about forming an army, about departing or dissolving NATO, confronting the United States and Russia and China. All of this is fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Now, as I wrap up this program today, I want to quote to you several articles from The Trumpet. You can find all of these on our website, thetrumpet.com, and you can really dig deep into this subject. The Ukraine crisis was prophesied about in your Bible, and you could see a lot of planning. This is an article from The Guardian, Monday, December 10th this year. It says, Russia paved the way for Ukraine ship seizure with fake news drive. Says the false claim, said to have been spread for more than a year, included that Ukraine had infected the sea with cholera and that its secret services had been trying to transport a nuclear bomb to occupied Crimea, according to this British commissioner. And so the point of this article is to point out that Russia has been actively spreading disinformation and trying to scare the residents there in Crimea and Ukraine, that the British were trying to smuggle a nuclear weapon in there to blow up a bridge to cause chaos. Now, that story, I think, caught the world by surprise, but not us. not us. All of this is shaping Europe. Let me advance now. We started in 2008. Let me advance us to February 2015. And I'm going to just very quickly quote some headlines from thetrumpet.com. Jeremiah Jocks has written frequently about what's going on with Russia, the Far East, and he's also got really some great insight into Georgia and Ukraine. This is from February 2015. The article title is Russia is pulling a Crimea in Georgia. So this is 2015 now. It said in 2008, Russia fought a war with Georgia over South Ossetia. Georgia has ambitions to join NATO, but Russia has said it would not allow such a move. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Russia would take measures to prevent negative effects of attempts to drag Georgia into NATO. He quotes Gerald Fleury from that 2008 article that said Russia's attack on Georgia in August of 2008 marks the beginning of a dangerous new era in history. This was the first military strike of a rising Asian superpower. There will be more. Jeremiah shows, documents, history shows and documents, there have been more. March 2015, Jeremiah Jocks again. Russia arming Argentina to enable grab of the Falkland Islands. Back in 2015, it was reported that Russia was trying to send 12 long-range supersonic bomber jets to Argentina. That was a threat to Britain. But really, who was the target there? Well, it was beyond Britain. It's a threat to the United States. I hate to race through this, but moving forward to May 2018, talks about the Crimean Bridge. Jeremiah Jocks, again, a metaphor for Vladimir Putin's reign. And you could read through that article. Then November 25th, as I quoted earlier, the naval confrontation in the Kerch Strait. Then December 4th, 2018, now we're getting very close to today, Russia deploys more S-400 missiles in Crimea. There's four S-400 sophisticated missile batteries now in Crimea. What is Russia doing? They're planning for something. Those are very sophisticated weapon systems. Nikolai Guliar is the author of this article. He said this deployment is likely to have been long planned, but the timing of the announcement appeared to be designed as a message to Ukraine and the West that Russia is serious about defending what it regards as its own territorial waters. 4 days ago, this is from the Associated Press, Ukraine says it will send naval ships through Kerch Strait soon. So 4 days ago, this is after we've had the confrontation, Ukraine realizes they cannot back down. They have to stand up to Putin. This article says Ukraine's defense ministry warned Russia on Friday that it will soon send Navy ships through the Kerch Strait, where Russia fired on and seized three Ukrainian vessels 2 weeks ago. I wouldn't want to be a member of the Ukraine Navy right now. And as this points out, it's setting up another flashpoint. The Ukraine is under martial law, as we know. They're enhancing, they're beefing up their forces on the border with Russia, that 1,000-mile border with Russia. They're calling up their reservists. They intend to take another provocative, as the Russians will call it, another provocative expedition through that strait, or they're going to try to. Really fascinating what's going on, but it doesn't stop there. 2 days ago, December 11th, Russia is silent after sending two nuclear-capable bombers to Venezuela. What is Putin doing? He knows he can push. He knows that Jeroboam does have some power, but it's limited. It's not backed by the country. When Vladimir Putin sees opportunity, he seizes on it. Talking about these bombers, how amazing they are. And then I was going to read a couple of news stories here about how the United States leadership in the military sees our weakness and we're struggling to confront that by rebuilding our forces. I'll just conclude by going back to Isaiah 46. This is where we started, where God said that he's God. He declares the end from the beginning. He's in control of the time. He says that his purpose will stand. Notice verse 11 of Isaiah 46. He says, calling a ravenous bird from the east, the man that executes my counsel from a far country. Yea, I have spoken it. I will also bring it to pass. I have purposed it. I will also do it. God is in control. He's declaring the end through the beginning. He's using Gerald Fleury and this platform to warn the world. But it all leads to the return of Jesus Christ. Two final verses, and I'll let you go. Verse 12, still here in Isaiah 46. God says, "Hearken unto me, you stout-hearted that are far from righteousness. I bring near my righteousness. It shall not be far off, and my salvation shall not tarry. And I will place salvation in Zion for Israel, my glory." You see, when you understand all of these events, it's all orchestrated by God, and it's all leading to the return of Jesus Christ and the restoration of his government on this earth. Well, sorry I got so rushed there at the end. There's a lot taking place. Thank you for listening to me, and we hope to have Stephen Fleury back tomorrow. Have a great day.